Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Shuttle Pod. This is episode 25, our Devil in the Dark episode. My name is Brian Drew, and I am joined by Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, this is Kayla.
And Mr. Jared Whitley.
Hello, welcome back, friends.
All right, well, initially we had planned to do a whole different topic today, but last night the news about Brian Fuller stepping down as the showrunner of Star Trek Discovery ended up being released, and we thought we would discuss our reactions both to that news and, you know, discuss, like, essentially what the future of the franchise looks like right now with this Fuller news happening and the underwhelming box office for Discovery and for Beyond. And this is potentially a fraught time in Star Trek's history, which is kind of surprising considering it's the 50th anniversary and things looked very bright just a few months ago.
Yeah.
But who knows? It may just look bad right now, and things will get, you know, what is it they say? Sometimes it's darkest before it's light or something. So
yep.
It's always darkest before the dawn.
Yeah, that's the line from Dark Knight.
Anyway, so the news that dropped was that Brian Fuller is stepping down as the showrunner of Star Trek Discovery, but will remain on the show in a creative capacity. He's written, apparently, the first two episodes, the pilot, and I think that the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
But he will be stepping away from the day-to-day operations of the program. He is apparently overcommitted to other projects, including American Gods, which is an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's novel.
Yeah.
The show running responsibilities will be taken over by associates of Brian's by the name of Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts. So, guys, what do we feel about this whole situation? Are we okay with it? Are we nervous about it? What do you think?
I'm a little nervous. I mean, the first thing I thought when this happened was just like, well, shit. I was really happy about Brian being the showrunner for everything. Like, ever since his announcement, I think it's been like nothing but home runs in terms of news coming out about Discovery. Save for maybe the delay, but even that wasn't a big deal because it was like, oh, Brian wants more time to make the perfect Star Trek for us.
Yep.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
Right.
And we've waited for 11 years since a new episode of Star Trek on TV. We can wait a couple months.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I can wait a couple months for it to be even better.
Yeah.
But I'm hopeful that his vision, it sounds like, Brian's vision for the show is intact, at least for the early stages of the series. Some of the things he promised us, like a gay male lead character, an openly gay character, like things like that have been confirmed that, you know, they're still going to be around. Those things are still going to be there. The vision that he had set forth, it sounds like, is intact. So
yeah,
that makes me feel a little better. But at the same time, it's like without him there, I mean, I know he's still going to be a producer, but I just was so confident in the idea of him at the helm, and it sounds like his replacement, who they're not calling showrunner, they're saying he's a, quote, top creative role, is this gent named Akiva Goldsman.
Yeah.
Some people seem indifferent, some people seem unhappy about that addition.
Yeah, I can't claim to be too thrilled about the idea, to be honest with you.
In general, or for Mr. Goldsman?
You know, Goldsman, yeah. Mr. Goldsman. One of his first major screenwriting credits is the notorious Batman and Robin from 1997.
Yeah.
So that's one of his first credits. And, you know, he's known for, like, being involved in, like, the Transformers movies. And a lot of his work is not what would be considered high quality.
Yeah.
He did write A Beautiful Mind, the Ron Howard.
Oh, sure.
The Ron Howard movie that Russell Crowe appeared in. But
sounds like a mixed bag. From him.
Yeah, overall, his screenwriting credits are nothing to write home about. He had worked with Alex Kurtzman before on Fringe. He was part of the Fringe production team for a while. I can't say that, based on his reputation, that his inclusion in this is engendering a whole lot of confidence.
Yeah.
But we shall see. It sounds like this switchover from Brian to this new team happened very rapidly.
Yeah.
Yeah, CBS basically said in their, I think it was in their press release, that they said this basically happened over the weekend, so.
Yeah, so I don't know if, you know, some people are bought in simply because of, you know, okay, we need somebody to, like, help guide things along. Who's available right now?
Yeah, like tomorrow.
Yeah, And, you know, maybe he was on the short list. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to be pessimistic. I don't want to be pessimistic, but I just was not thrilled when I heard that. That's all.
Now, I think we all, to echo Kayla, what you said, I think we all uttered some colorful metaphors when we saw this news, because everything, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Everything we'd heard from Brian was that this guy got us, right? I mean, the tweets that say, like, it's going to be informed by balance of terror. I'm like, that sounds fantastic. I am so delighted that he knew what balance of terror was without having to look it up on the internet.
You know? That's the thing, right? Like, Brian's a huge Trekkie. And when we saw him at Comic-Con in San Diego, he was just beaming, man. He was like...
No pun intended.
No pun intended. He was on cloud nine. Like, he just seemed so genuinely happy to be put in charge of this project. And, you know, it makes me feel so bad that it didn't work out, because everyone was just so happy about it. And then it kind of fell apart.
Yeah, there was Star Trek news, and Star Trek fans almost universally were not complaining about it.
Which is like a record.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's harder than reaching the warp 10 barrier.
Yeah, it is. And Brian tweeted out last night after the news broke, and his tweet makes me even more sad because he uses a Star Trek metaphor. He said, "Riker spent 7 years of TNG unready for captaincy." And then he added Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts. He said, "Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts are ready. Thrilled to see them in command of the bridge."
Yeah.
It's like, in announcing his departure, he made us even sadder that he was departing.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, as shocking as this was, if you stop and think about it, it seemed kind of clear that something was wrong. Because...
Oh, with the delay?
Obviously, the delay was the delay. They claimed
because
it was the visual effects they claimed. But apparently it had to be more than the visual effects that was causing a delay, because they haven't even finished casting yet.
Yeah.
And theoretically, before that delay was announced, they were supposed to have started shooting over a month ago.
Holy cow.
So I suspect it was a lot more than the visual effects. They simply were not ready to go.
Yeah.
And I think all the studio space had been rented, the production crews have been hired, blah, 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 and the meter keeps running. And I think ultimately they have to get the ball rolling. The business of television.
It's like you said to me last night, Brian. You're saying, you know, they're paying a bunch of people to just stand around and wait, basically, at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the business of television doesn't wait for anybody. I mean, there's millions of dollars at stake. I mean, we found out yesterday that it's going to cost between $6 and $7 million an episode.
That's so much.
Discovery, which is a lot of money.
So much.
I mean, I don't know if that's Game of Thrones level, but it's pretty damn close.
Yeah, what's typical? What's more typical for this kind of production?
Well, for Game of Thrones, the figure I've heard is $6 million an episode. The thing is,
got to be a top filler.
Yeah, yeah. I think HBO could probably run that show on t-shirt sales alone, but even still, that's a high amount.
So Discovery is right there at Game of Thrones level funding. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
Which shows how serious
it shows confidence.
CBS is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Very much so. Very much so. So, you know, I guess it's unfortunate that this had to happen. It makes everybody uncomfortable, including, I'm sure, the staff of the show. But maybe it's for the best. Brian seemed to be overtaxed with other things, with, you know, American Gods. And apparently he's in the early stages of developing a relaunch of Amazing Stories on NBC.
Which I'm surprised to hear that's getting rebooted. Wasn't that basically like a feel-good Twilight Zone for the 80s?
Yeah, pretty much. It was Spielberg. It was Steven Spielberg.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Thing is, and we were talking about this before.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd choice. I agree.
We were talking about this before we started recording, but I think American Gods is going to be the next Game of Thrones. I think it's going to be extremely successful. It's built off, you know, Neil Gaiman has written two books in that world, and it's very similar to his work he did on Sandman with the DC Comics series from the late 80s and early 90s. Which was hugely successful at the time and still has a tremendous legacy. And I'm kind of surprised that it's taken so long to adapt one of Neil's properties for the small screen. I can't believe that they haven't tried to do a Sandman series on Showtime or something. But I think this is going to be huge, and I can't blame him wanting to do this instead, because American Gods is going to win Bram Fuller Emmys and Star Trek Discovery wouldn't. I hate to say that.
Well, you don't know. Maybe it'll be the best Star Trek ever.
Ever.
Okay. I am fully confident that it will be. Thing is, we have the best Star Trek ever, and we had the best captain ever, and Patrick Stewart never got nominated for Best Actor, and TNG only got nominated for Best Drama once.
Wow.
Yeah, but that was a different time.
It
that was.
Was
a stigma to science fiction.
It was a it was a completely different era. If Star Trek Discovery did well enough in the current environment, I think it could be a contender. But I think American Gods is a safer bet.
There wasn't that much of a stigma, though, when you think about it, because Leonard Nimoy got nominated for an Emmy all 3 years.
All 3 years.
The original series was on the air.
Yep, wow. That's true. Yeah.
But yes, TNG was a syndicated program, and, you know.
So there was a prejudice
down on
there.
Syndicated programs, yep. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, totally. Totally.
But now with Netflix and basic cable, the sky's the limit.
Yep. Unquestionably.
Yeah, and something, you know, I really admire, Star Trek has primarily been a TV franchise. The Emmys has been much more adaptive to the way that the medium has changed, much more so than the Oscars are for recognizing movies. I mean, the first animated feature was Snow White, but there wasn't a best Oscar for animated pictures until the mid-90s, which is like 60-year lag time. Whereas TV, I mean, the fact that they have categories for like best title sequence and stuff like that, I think is a good move on the part of the Emmys. So when there's more categories, then there's more opportunities for something to win, especially a show that's going to have the level of craftsmanship and technical expertise that Discovery obviously will. I think we can all be confident in that.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, like I said, this is a little unsettling, but I mean, it sounds like all the creative momentum is already there. Like, I know that Brian has apparently mapped out the entire season arc.
Oh, great.
He's heavily involved in at least the first couple of episodes. It's not like he's leaving completely. He's simply not going to be doing the day-to-day anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
The first thing I thought of when I saw this was J.J. Abrams, of how he's good at, like, starting stuff off and then disappearing like Lost. I think he only directed...
Leaving. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think he directed the pilot, and that was it. But that got it going.
Yeah.
And then Nicholas Meyer will still be involved, right? There's been no indication that he's left the team, right?
Right, no, he's still on board.
Yeah, the team is intact as far as I know. Yeah. Nothing's changing.
Do we know who's going to, mentioning directing, do we know who's going to, have any directors been mentioned?
Just the fellow who's directing the pilot, whose name escapes me at the moment.
I would love to see them have Jonathan Frakes direct a couple episodes.
That would be great, yeah.
Yeah.
David Semel.
There you go. Yeah, so far he's been the only director announced.
Huh. For the first episode.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see Frakes.
Yeah.
But who knows, we'll see what kind of kind of visual vocabulary the show is going to feature, you know,
mm-hmm.
and whether that's the kind of thing that's in Jonathan's wheelhouse or not, you know.
Sure.
I suspect this Star Trek show is going to look very different from every other Star Trek show ever done, not just in production design, but shooting style, lighting, cutting, everything is going to be very, very different.
Sure, it has to. Something that I liked that.
Yeah, it's good.
Saw, yeah.
And when we saw Ronald Moore talk at Vegas, he said, you know, they had different ideas for stuff they wanted to do, and they were told, no, you got to basically keep in the mold. And so, like, on Battlestar Galactica, the way they shot space scenes, it was, like, documentary footage, where it was, or like, there was, like, a news crew out there shooting everything, and they'd be floating around, and it wouldn't see what was going on, and then a raptor would just fly by, and it would zoom in really tight on it really quickly, the way mm-hmm. like, a documentary film crew might. So hopefully they have the freedom to experiment a little bit more artistically with stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't feel like they're going to be so... I don't feel like they're going to worship that little Roddenberry box the way Rick Berman did.
Yeah.
I feel like they're gonna push the boundaries. They're not going to worry about, you know, get caught in that perpetual idea of, you know, what would Gene do?
Sure.
Right.
And that can only benefit the show.
I agree.
Star Trek has to evolve. It has to, you know, it has to grow.
I was watching this Screen Junkies show. They did this movies fight, and they were talking about, like, the best sequel in a franchise. And talking about, you know, like, the Aliens and the Terminator franchise. And I think people will always regard the first or second movie in those franchises as the best ever. I mean, they could, you know, the 20 years, they could be making Alien or Terminator movies, and people will say, yeah, but the second one was the best. I don't want people to say that about Star Trek, right? 10 years from now, I want people to say, yeah, but this was, you know, people really liked that for a long time, but this is really good too. This could probably be the best as well. And a franchise that succeeded at this, which I hope Discovery will follow in their footsteps, is the Doctor Who franchise. I mean, I don't think anyone says, yeah, but the best time in Doctor Who was 1978. No, they say the best time in Doctor Who is right now.
Right.
Yeah, or very recently.
Or very recently, the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, you know, it's... so we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope that the news that comes out following this will be just as encouraging as the first couple headlines we saw, but who's to say?
Yeah, I think the takeaway that I think we can all agree on here is that Brian Fuller stepping down as showrunner is very disheartening and sad and kind of upsetting, but that it's not the end of the world. He's still around. The vision that we've been given is still going to be there.
Right. Now, whether he will continue with the show beyond its first season,
right?
Who knows?
Right.
You know that. But for now, I don't think people should worry too much that we're not going to get what we were promised. I think we are.
It is just concerning to me that I didn't recognize any of these names that were mentioned. The Gretchen Berg, Aaron Harbarts, and Akiva Goldsman. And then when I looked them up on IMDb, I didn't really recognize much that they'd worked on. And so that just made me a little sad.
Yeah, well, like I said, Goldsman is the only bold-faced name. The other two are kind of just production partners of Brian's, I believe.
And I think they've been... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they've been on the project, and they will, because the you know, we haven't heard much about them, but as the CBS press release says, let's see, Alex Kurtzman, co-creator and executive producer, along with Fuller's producing partners and longtime collaborators, Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harbarts, will also continue to oversee the show with the existing writing and producing team. So it sounds like they've been involved. So it's not just like throwing in a bunch of new random people.
Okay, yeah.
Right. It's my understanding that they were running the room when Brian was off doing his other projects. So I guess it's just their role will simply be expanded. That's all. It's not like the writing staff and the production crew don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. They already know who they are.
Yeah, because that would be pretty bad to mix things up that much at this stage.
This late? Yeah. Totally. Absolutely.
So the other news that came out of yesterday is, like Brian mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, that Discovery is still not totally cast. So it sounds like it's almost entirely cast, but the lead female lieutenant commander role that we've been hearing about for so long is still not cast.
It's still not cast. And from what I understand, that was also a bone of contention with CBS, is that they still didn't have a lead.
Seems kind of important to have a lead character, doesn't it?
Yeah, when they're supposed to be filming already.
Yeah.
Although some great Star Trek actors got cast after production already started.
Yep.
Kate Mulgrew.
Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, the famous story of Kate Mulgrew,
I think they were on day 3 or 4 of the Voyager pilot when Jean-Pierre Bujold walked away. So it could still all work out just fine. But I think that was definitely a bone of contention.
Yeah, also in terms of publicity, if they had somebody who was already cast and had been announced, then that those individuals could be already be on the convention circuit. And even if all they can say is, you know, something Mark Hamill says whenever he goes to conventions, he says, I know how delighted you are to come here, ask me questions about a movie that I'm contractually obligated to not tell you anything about. So, you know, even if that's all a person can do, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to see them and see the buzz getting out there.
Yep. Yeah, but so the good news is once they finally do figure out who that person is going to be, the show will be fully cast, and hopefully they'll announce the cast.
Yeah, anytime now.
So we have something to chew on.
Any day now.
Something to discuss, besides just whispers and rumors and snippets.
So I would expect the next month to be very interesting on the Discovery front.
Yeah, I hope. Now, in terms of casting, here's a question for you. Do you think it'd be better for them to go with in the lead role with an unknown, or would it be good to pull like a Star Trek Enterprise and cast like a Scott Bakula type who's already been successful on TV.
I'm guessing the temptation is going to be to cast someone familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would think so too. People besides Star Trek fans.
Yep, that's what I would think.
I know that Brian has been very fond of Angela Bassett.
Oh, that's right.
And Rosario Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows? Maybe that's a direction they'll go. And you know, it's a little harder to get somebody like Rosario Dawson, who mostly has a feature film career, and you know, might be a little more complicated to get her to commit.
Yeah, so
maybe that's part of what's holding this up. Who knows?
She's also on the Marvel Netflix series.
Or they may have gotten another way altogether. Who knows?
Sure.
What's that, Jer?
She's also on the Marvel Netflix series.
Right, like Luke Cage.
Daredevil, Luke, and Luke Cage. And maybe she's on Jessica Jones,
right,
too.
Right.
And so I don't know if how much her schedule would allow for even more TV work.
Yeah. I mean, that's total speculation on my part. The only reason I mentioned it is because I've heard him mention her name before.
Yeah.
And she actually is a Star Trek fan, Rosario Dawson.
Oh, cool.
So this has been a very odd year, considering it's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Yeah, I think the anniversary has just highlighted the hiccups.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's safe to say that, like, maybe in, like, March, when, you know, the show had just been announced and the movie was on the horizon, and we had all these conventions and celebrations coming, I think we all felt really good about Star Trek at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now, personally at least, I feel a little unnerved because, you know, obviously beyond underperformed. There's no other way to describe it. The movie underperformed. You can't sugarcoat it in any way. It not only underperformed, it kind of grossly underperformed.
Yep. I think it dramatically underperformed. I mean, it made like $80 million less than Into Darkness.
Yeah, and keep in mind, like, it made less than the 2009 movie did. And that's with ticket prices from 7 years ago and didn't have any IMAX or 3D premiums attached to it either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge drop-off.
Yeah, and if you look at it, there I was looking at the Box Office Mojo. There are no data points on Star Trek Beyond for its box office performance that are remarkable. Like, its opening weekend was the lowest of the three. Its its domestic gross was the lowest of the three. Its worldwide gross was the lowest of the three. Like, its drop off from the second weekend was the highest of the three, by quite a bit. It dropped about 58% its second week, whereas the other two were 42% and 47%, which means The bigger the drop-off means the weaker the word of mouth is, which means there are fewer people saying, hey, I saw this last weekend, you should go see it this weekend. So, yeah, there's no silver lining. And the thing that makes me sad about that is I feel like, from the fans' perspective, Beyond is the one that we liked the best. I think that's safe to say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think after it came out, the phrase, best of the three, was all over the internet.
Yeah, I agree. Okay,
but
there have been rumblings about Star Trek IV, fourth installment in this iteration, to the point where they said, we're going to use the script from J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto are coming back, and then the other news item that was remarkable is it looks like someone is invoking a piece of his contract that maybe he didn't sign, but they're saying that they could bring Chris Hemsworth back for the fourth one. Go ahead, Caleb.
JJ has been saying that since, I think, before Beyond came out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right before it came out, he went and said, oh, and Chris Hemsworth is going to be in it, and it's going to be great. And everyone's like, JJ, can you really do this, or are you just talking out of your ass?
Yeah.
And we think he was talking out of his ass.
That's what I would guess, too.
I think, as we've discussed before, I think it's going to be difficult to do another movie. I don't feel like there's going to be any momentum and any will to do it.
Yeah.
And if they do it, the cast is going to look different because they're going to cut the budget like crazy.
They have to.
They're going to focus on, focus on Pine and Quinto and Hemsworth.
Mm.
Not Zoe Saldana? You think she's too big of a get at this point?
No. I'm just saying, but that seems to be the focus.
Mm-hmm.
She certainly is more.
At least right now.
She certainly is more successful than Pine and Quinto at this point.
Yeah. But with Guardians of the Galaxy and everything, her career has taken off since the first movie.
Yep. And with Avatar, I mean...
Yeah, but she's not a star, guys.
You're right. She hasn't... No movie that she's headlined has been a blockbuster. However, you could say the same thing about Chris Pine. No non-Star Trek movie that he's headlined has been great. And Zachary, the thing... I hate to say
none of them.
Because I don't want to feel like I'm picking on him because I like him. But Zachary Quinto doesn't even have his own box office mojo page. So
he's a TV actor.
He's a Yeah, but he's not putting bums in seats.
Nope. No, none of them are. None of those people. Maybe Simon Pegg when he does some of his comedy movies or something.
Yeah,
but he's some bums in seats. But that's it.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I mean, of all of them, the actors, the one I like the best is Carl Urban as Bones. And so if there were a movie that was more based on him, I would be delighted with that.
Yeah, me too. I think a lot of people would. He's a fantastic actor.
He's
a lot of fun.
He's got so much nerd street cred. I mean, he was in Xena the Warrior Princess. He was in Judge Dredd. He was in Lord of the Rings. Oh, and then, of course, it has to be said, regardless of what happens, Pavel Chekhov will not be recast. They will not bring the character back after Anton Yelchin's unfortunate passing.
Yeah, which I think is classy.
Yeah.
And very appropriate.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, guys, I mean, if they do make a fourth movie, they're going to, I mean, beyond cost, I believe, $190
million.
$185 million.
Into Darkness is $190 million. So they cut it just a teeny bit.
It's notable that it cost basically the same as Into Darkness and made much, much less.
Yeah. And I think they're going to cut the budget for the next one at least by $50 million, you would think.
Mm.
Like whatever they're going to do next, they're going to have to figure out price controls. Because as we've said in the past, what happens with Star Trek movies is that the actors' salaries end up soaking up a disproportionate amount of the production budget.
Yeah.
So you end up with a lot of actor and very little movie.
Yeah.
Everything looks kind of cheap because the actors are soaking up the budget. So,
yeah, the thing is,
they're going to have to figure out a way to control that.
Which, I mean, do you think they would eliminate some of the cast members? Do you think they'd say, okay, well, we're just not going to have Spock come back this time, or oh, we're just not going to have Uhura come back if she's the biggest draw?
I think that they'll just recast.
Seriously?
You think they'd recast?
Yep. I do. I don't think they're going to make another movie anyway, but I think they would recast.
I think
you'll never be able to afford all those actors again.
But what if
they had to renegotiate their contracts?
What if they had them in like a almost cameo role where you see Uhura in like one scene? Because they're not.
If they'd be interested in that, maybe. I don't know. A lot of actors don't like that stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Who knows? I mean, I could be completely off base, but I don't think so.
That would be weird, though, to recast it. That's never happened in Trek before.
Yeah, but then again, this is also a feature film only franchise. We don't have the emotional attachment that the fans have is typically built over seven years of a television show.
I think if they recast it, I think it would just people would go in thinking that it was a cheap knockoff of the other three already. Because I feel like that's the impression I would have as an audience member is like, they can't even get the original cast members. Like this is just like the last, you know, the death throes of this franchise.
Well, they have Pine and Quinto already.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, if they're going to be like, oh, we're recasting Uhura or, you know, anyone else, I'm just like, as an audience member, that sounds like something's not right.
It seems more likely that they just write the character off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or the movie doesn't really take place in the Enterprise at all.
Yep.
Yeah, which is, I mean, writing a character out is bad enough because it's going to be a glaring omission. Anyone of the, you know, of the quote-unquote main cast that's not there is going to be obvious.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, they have their challenges. I don't believe there'll be another movie anyway.
I think you're right.
I think they feel like the audience has abandoned this whole thing.
And I think that's important in light of the news from yesterday about Brian Fuller stepping down. It's just there's already a tremendous amount of pressure, as you guys pointed out, on Discovery to perform well. It's sort of, you know, we've thrown all of our strength in the franchise behind this television series. If we think the film franchise is sort of dying out, you know, if we don't want to see Trek go away again, like it did after Enterprise, you know, this TV show's got to do well, and it's got to create a lot of buzz around it, and the potential for other spinoffs.
There's an enormous amount of pressure on this show.
So I think a big part of my sadness at Brian Fuller stepping down from his main showrunner position is this idea that I was so happy and so confident in the show, and now it's just like, okay, there's a little bit of turmoil. I think it's going to be okay, but I'm nervous. I think maybe my reaction to him stepping down is more severe because I'm so nervous about the future of the franchise, and I know how much is riding on this show. And I want the show to be great, obviously, but I want it to be good enough as well so that we can continue to get more Trek.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. Yeah, this show is so important for the franchise's future. Not just to bring in new Trek, but to bring in a new and younger audience to Trek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We need a new, truly, like, hit show that everybody, that most of the fan base can get behind. Because I feel like that hasn't happened for a long time. Let's face it, the two standard bearers of this franchise, one of them is 50 and the other one's going to be 30.
Yep.
Like, yeah. Star Trek is aging badly, and like it needs.
It's like what we talked about with Insurrection.
It needs, like, younger.
I was about to say that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead, exactly. Jared.
When Ruafo goes off on the evil admiral, and he says the Federation is old and you need new life and you think I can give it to you. It's like, we need some unethical Sonas with their radiation collection technology to come and inject some life into this franchise. Okay, here's the other thing.
Come and stretch the face of Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Do some weird plastic surgery. So I wrote an article about Black Mirror, the British sort of dystopian sci-fi show. The new season dropped on Netflix. I'm not sure if by the time you listen to it, if we'll have posted the article on the website. But the thing is, Star Trek captured the spirit in the 60s and in the 70s, a little bit of the 80s, of the idea that we had this new technology, which was space travel, right? I mean, the fact that we sent a man to the moon in 1969 was incredible, right? And people needed to tell stories to sort of capture the imagination of that technological shift. And the thing is, there hasn't, no offense to anyone in NASA or whatever, but there hasn't been anything that remarkable that's happened since 1969. I mean, we haven't been able to, send people to Mars. We haven't achieved faster than light travel or anything like that. Whereas the technological shift has been, in computers and the internet, and so much has changed there. And so we want to tell stories that reflect the way that technological paradigm shift has happened. And so I think it's basically NASA's fault, is what I'm saying. If they can get people like on Uranus or whatever, I'm joking, of course. But I think what I am serious about is if it's harder for Star Trek to capture that imagination when our imagination isn't looking up at the sky, our imagination is looking down on our palms. Right, and that's what Black Mirror means. Is it's when you turn your screen off and it's a black mirror at the technology that's taken over our lives. So I think there is go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge thing. It's like, where is the space industry today? And I mean, I think an important thing, like NASA would probably have us at Mars. We would have been at Mars for a long time. We would have had stuff going on the moon for a long time. If our budget was anything like it was in the 60s. NASA's budget has never even approached what it was in the 1960s, because the space program in the 1960s wasn't driven by exploration. It was driven by war and fear.
Sure.
We had to beat the Russians to space because we can put missiles in space and shoot down our enemies, basically. And after that, after we got to the moon and that whole thing fizzled out, funding for science isn't as exciting to congressmen as funding for, politics and war. So, unfortunately, that's what happened.
And it also can't, it's not as easy to monetize as new cell phone technology. So there's no private sector driving it as the way as we've seen with smartphone and internet technology and stuff like that.
Yeah, and of course there are tons of technological spin-offs that have been coming out of NASA since the 60s, but there's so much, there's such a huge monetary barrier to getting that out. You have to have, you like you said, you can't have a private sector come in and do this kind of research because it's so prohibitively expensive. There's no return on it. Like you get these technologies out, but it's not a good business decision because you're going to spend way more than you make.
Sure. And I'm not in any way trying to criticize people who are still looking in, you know, at the stars and they're going to eventually get us there. But I just, in terms of the larger cultural need for this kind of storytelling, mm-hmm. it's not the same world.
I agree. Although I think it can change. And I think there's something sort of in the water right now, at least in my opinion, of we've had a lot of these dark, introspective anti-hero things, and I think you know, at least I know for myself, like I'm kind of getting kind of tired of that. I'm getting kind of weary of the like I hate myself after I watch a television episode.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
And like I love those shows; they're so good, but they also make you feel like everyone's a horrible person. And like this is one of the reasons I really love Supergirl so much. Like that show's got some problems, but it's so hopeful, and it's because all about like rainbows and everyone's good and happy. Yeah. And I'm just like, you know what? I need that in my life. Like, let's have Star Trek be like outgoing, looking out at the stars, pushing the human race forward. Like, I think if they do that, if they capture that aspect of it, they can go far with that.
You know, I appreciate that you cited Supergirl, because what I was going to say when you started talking about bleak heroes, like, I hate that the new Superman, that he doesn't smile, right? Like, Superman should always be smiling at the camera, right? And so, thank you for citing that.
Yeah, he's a Boy Scout.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, he should be cheerful. But my favorite moment in the Christopher Reeve Superman is he's going to go fight the Kryptonians in Superman 2, and some guy like says, "Whoa, what's going on?" And he looks at the guy and says, "Excuse me," and then flies off. Like, he's in the middle of a fight to save the world, and he still remembers his manners, right?
Yeah, and, Superman and would person, totally do that.
And the person that always reminds me of in the Star Trek franchise is Data, right? Data is just, like, polite to Kivas Fajo right before he's about to shoot him with a phaser. We all love that brightness and that cheerfulness. And in terms of tone, yes, absolutely. I think there's a market for that, and I think people would be delighted to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't really mean to go down that rabbit hole quite as much as you did, or lead us down that rabbit hole. But I'm glad that. Anyway, I think it's definitely germane.
Well, my takeaway is if people want to see more Star Trek, then support funding for science.
Sure.
Yeah. Your local science programs and your schools and
vote for people who support science, not anti-science people, because there are plenty of anti-science people in politics.
Certainly are.
End rant.
Yeah, we won't go there. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting, you know, the next year is going to tell us a lot about what the future of the franchise actually is. And hopefully it's a bright and shiny one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we need that in this world, right, guys?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the other thing. Like, Brian Fuller is all about that positivity and loving your brother and all that kind of stuff. Like, he seems like he has, you know, he has those core values. So I was like, yay, this is not going to be a depressing, dark Star Trek.
Right. Yeah, Brian gets it, and we know that. Yeah. And I think we're going to be fine.
Except for the film franchise, which we just said was dead. But the broader franchise will survive. We'll live long and prosper.
Oh, yes. Right. Definitely.
Okay, well, I think we've covered that pretty well. Mr. Whitley, do you have a Trek anecdote for us?
Oh, thank you for asking, Brian. Yes, I do. So this is a more recent one. So I moved a month ago or so from the United States to Dubai. Which I'll be here for a year or so. And Dubai really feels like it's a city from the future because it's got, you know, architecture that sprung up overnight, so all the buildings are new. It's got this amazing public transportation system. It's got the tallest building in the world. There are sections of the city that have literally been terraformed in terms of, like, these palm fronds that they created in the Persian Gulf to create more beachfront property, and like if you go on Google Earth, you can see the palm fronds sticking there. It's really remarkable. And then in terms of like an ethnic diversity standpoint, like only 7 to 10% of the city are native Emiratis, and everybody else is from all around the world. And so this city kind of feels like it's from Star Trek because of this convergence of all different types of people and all this futuristic looking landscape. And when I moved here, you know, at first I thought it was kind of cool to be, you know, to do something so exotic and so different. But then the little part of me that is a 12-year-old boy got a little sad just realizing that I'll never be able to go to another world. And so this is kind of a melancholy Trek anecdote, that I'm delighted that I have this opportunity to do this, but I'm still just sad that, you know. Sorry, I didn't mean to get emotional. But just, I'm a little sad that we'll never be able to go to another world. Hopefully our kids will.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, you're out there, you're doing Star Trek, though. You're exploring the world that we do have. And there's so much, like, you know, I'm a geologist, so obviously Earth is my favorite planet. And there's so much on Earth that we don't understand and that we can explore. And we can take the ideals of Trek and use them to explore our own world and understand who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said, Kill.
Yeah, well said, Kill. Anyway, there you go. So my first melancholy Trek anecdote. I usually try to do jokes, but that is just something that hit me recently.
That's okay. It comes from the heart. Those are the best ones.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right, kids. Well, I think we've wrapped this one up.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Brian Drew.
I'm Kayla Iacovino.
I'm Jared Whitley.
And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye.
Into the doctor's office. The doctor tells him you need an operation. The guy says, I want a second opinion. The doctor says, okay, you're ugly too, but boom, boom.